This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You're now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
This beer tastes like the in-between of your big toe and your next bigger toe.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Deese World Studios in Spokane, Washington, this is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian Bree Bedili. And now your host. He's excited for summer to come, but he's even more excited for nuclear winter. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thank you for coming around for another episode. We appreciate you hanging out with us through all that's been going on and the craziness in the world the last few weeks. As per the new schedule, we are releasing every Tuesday and Thursday now as opposed to just Wednesdays. Coming to you twice a week, working towards five times a week for you. Monday through Friday is the goal. So keep eyes and ears out for that. Things may be a little disrupted due to everything that's been going on. We have been kind of catering our release schedule to not disrupt the necessary civil unrest out there. We want that to kind of be dominating the airwaves so people can get as much information on that. But we are working around it, and you'll still get us twice a week. It just probably isn't as important as things that are happening in the world today. as always, guys, real quickly off the top, go to Patreon.com/PantsPending if you want to subscribe. You can do a one-time donation or subscribe to our Patreon, and you'll get behind-the-scenes content from across the network. Lots of stuff out there you can check out, and we appreciate it. But either way, this show twice a week, as well as the Social Minute every Monday. So thank you very much for always being a good patron, guys. So we're going to get right into it. Again, no Sophie, no Jeremy. As you guys know, they're going to be here sporadically moving forward, but we will have them in studio as we can. But with us, coming all the way from Seattle, I believe, currently, via Zoom, we have comedian Bree Bedili. Bree, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing all right.
Yeah, hanging in there over there. You're in Seattle currently, is that right?
Yeah, I'm actually right in the heart of Capitol Hill, so
Oh, nice.
I've been hearing a lot of helicopters here today.
I imagine. So I met Bree at a comedy contest. I believe it was it last summer? When was that anyway?
So, I think it was like August last year, so almost exactly a year coming up.
Okay. So yeah, it's been a minute. Bree was incredibly funny. It was nice to meet her. I always love meeting other comics from other parts of the state as well as the country. And she is in the heart of Capitol Hill. Now, what's going on since we got to talk about it? You know, what's going on over there in Seattle currently, everything with the protests? Are there still any riots going on, or how crazy did it get over there actually from someone who's, you know, living there?
Yeah, things have definitely gotten out of hand. I mean, not necessarily from the protesters' point of view, but
right.
There's been a protest every night since Saturday, and we've also had curfews in effect since Saturday. Today, I think, was the first day that we haven't had one. There is, I think, a protest going on right now here in Capitol Hill that's so far so good.
Yeah.
Been okay without the police getting involved, but we'll see how long that lasts. It's been pretty crazy, pretty disheartening to see everything.
Yeah, I can imagine. I mean, it's the same thing as going on the last few days here. I was at the march Sunday here and then downtown all night, dodging tear gas and rubber bullets.
Yeah.
So it was quite interesting. Went back downtown last night also, or the following night for kind of the follow-up. And, you know, the plan is every night from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. downtown Spokane. So yeah, similar boat on a little smaller scale. You know, I am interested to know what it's like in Seattle being a larger city, also, you know, obviously more diverse city, how that looks and how the police are responding to people there. Because it sounds like from what I'm getting from what you said, the protesters were kind of, not the ones that turn this situation violent. Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, there's been a lot of twists on what you're seeing in the media that make it seem like the protests were violent from the start.
Right.
But that's, you know, not at all true.
Sure.
The police have just been insane here. They have tear gassed peaceful protesters. There was a group of people here on Capitol Hill last night that weren't doing anything, tear gassed them. They shot, you know, a kid the other day with a rubber bullet, I heard. Just
was it Seattle where they maced that little girl too?
Yeah.
That's sad. That's hard to watch. Have you attended any of them or been out for any of them?
I haven't yet.
Okay.
It's been really difficult for me to leave here. I mean,
I get it. Yeah. It's not an easy thing for a lot of reasons to go be a part of. It turned violent here, and maybe you can give me some insight about how it is in Seattle also from what you've seen and heard. We had some basically what I'd call white nationalists from out of state come into downtown. The protests were peaceful. The protest in March went great. We marched to the courthouse. We marched back. And then shortly after that, these white nationalists from out of state that were presented kind of presenting themselves undercover as they disguise themselves as an Antifa and then incited violence and then just kind of disappeared as the cops and then the cops militarized and kind of steamrolled the peaceful protesters. Has anything like that been happening in Seattle, or is it just mostly the police creating the violent scenario to begin with?
Oh yeah, there's definitely some undercover cops that are attending these protests. There's one going on right now that I heard. Seems a little suspicious. They're not quite sure if it's undercover cops yet, but they, I guess, took over the rally, made it, took some bullhorns down there, just kind of made it outrageous.
Sure.
So people are a little suspicious about those individuals at this point, but definitely have seen others that are undercover around the protests.
Yeah. I've got to imagine in bigger cities, it just scales up in crazier ways. I mean, Spokane's, you know, over 500,000 people, but that's, you know, Seattle, you get to Seattle and you're talking a whole nother thing. And again, more diverse and a much larger police force, you know, that has
more compact too. I mean, Seattle's a lot more compact because I used to live in Spokane too.
Yeah.
I lived there for about 10 years.
Oh, okay.
And I remember hearing how big it was all the time and just not believing it just because it is so just spread out and people don't really have to see each other quite as often as they do here in each neighborhood that they live in.
Yeah. And that's really true. That's one of the things I was interviewing a artist from Missoula, Montana last night, and her sister lives here in Spokane, and she was really surprised to hear that Spokane is the second biggest city in Washington state.
Yeah,
because for that reason, like you said, you don't, when you're here, you don't really notice it. Cause I mean, Spokane proper is pushing about 400,000 now. The major metropolitan areas where you get to about that 550,000 or so, probably a little bigger now. But yeah, I mean, it's so spread out where, I mean, Seattle, you have a couple 100,000 people crammed in downtown, basically, you know. I mean, it just kind of, so, you know, there is a little bit of a, I guess for lack of a better word, a little like already like an agitation boiling almost that can kind of just in the air, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like when you go downtown Spokane, it seems a little sleepy. Everybody's just kind of chill.
Yeah.
Walking around doing their own thing. In Seattle, it feels like it's go, go, go during the day downtown. You know, people are trying to get around each other and,
right. There's.
I mean, not right now because COVID ghost town down there.
Yeah. Right.
You can walk in the street down there, but normally, yeah, it's completely different beast.
How's it been? You know, before pre civil unrest, how was it? What was it like in Seattle when it was kind of the whole COVID thing and the quarantine? Were you adhering to the quarantine and just social distancing, sheltering in place, all those buzzwords they told us to do, or were you still going out and doing anything? Not that there's much to do, but I mean,
you know,
personally, I was still out and about photographing the city and things like that. Like, you know, but how about you?
Yeah. I mean, I've tried to be as safe as I can, but I definitely pushed it, especially at the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, they were warning us about this for quite some time, but as long as the businesses were open, I was still going to them.
Sure.
I actually remember quote unquote taking advantage of it because there's a karaoke bar here called the Hula Hula.
Okay.
Normally it's just insane. You're lucky if you get one song in.
All right.
But right before everything exploded with COVID, there was like 25 people at the bar, so we could get like three
do the whole roster, just rock all night. Yeah, nothing like sharing a microphone with a bunch of strangers in a compact space to make sure you don't get a communicable disease.
Well, to be fair, comedy was going on longer.
Well, that's okay. Yeah, that's true.
As well as I do, that sharing mics with those comics sometimes.
Right. Yeah, I don't even want to shake hands with most of them usually. So, yeah, that's so, I mean, is anything opening up there in Seattle yet? What's it like there?
Yeah, so King County is still seeing a pretty high number of cases. So I do believe that will be the last one that's going to be allowed to do most of anything.
Sure.
But we did just apply for a modified phase one because there's just no way that we're going to get into phase two anytime soon.
Sure. So what are they asking for? Like no new COVID cases in like 2 weeks or something? Is that what it is?
I think
or
it was like less than 10 per
some
thousand, or like 10,000 or something like that.
Sure.
New cases per week. Something like that. And we're still just so outrageously outside of that.
Yeah.
But in order to keep our economy afloat, there are some things that are loosening up, I've heard, if we get approved, but for this modified phase one.
Yeah.
Which, you know, would be something like certain restaurants can open their outdoor patios for 50% capacity. Certain hair salons could open, stuff like that, I guess. But for the most part, it's just takeout, delivery, all of those kinds of things. You can take your delivery out to the park.
So so there are restaurants doing takeout still.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
so some businesses, it's probably hard to gauge. Seattle's so big, what's your perspective on businesses returning? I mean, does it seem like there's a lot that are going to probably not reopen?
Excuse me. Yeah, no, there's a lot of, especially restaurants right now that are struggling.
Yeah.
You know, there's a couple around me that they closed for a while completely, didn't even have takeout or delivery.
Yeah.
And they've recently reopened, but it's hard when you're a bar and you only have bar food and people.
Right.
Wanting that as takeout. So it has been kind of a concerted effort for those of us who are still employed and couldn't afford takeout every day.
Yeah.
To try to keep these businesses afloat. Like right now I'm wearing a t-shirt from a bar close to my house called Corvus because I'm trying to support them in any way that I can.
Shout out to Corvus.
Yeah, Corvus. A great little bar.
All right.
But yeah, I do think that there's going to be a lot of restaurants that are closing because of this. And I mean, it's going to offer a new wave of different types of food, I think. But it is kind of sad to see.
Yeah, I mean, restaurants and bars, especially smaller ones, are such a fragile business. And so many of them are really like hand to mouth. You know, one night's business basically, or one week's business essentially, is just kind of throwing enough track out for the next week. And they, you know, these people aren't, with these one-off little bars, it's kind of just their passion. And, you know, they make enough money to survive and have this bar and kind of do what they enjoy, which is great. But it's not like they're not protected in a way, or they don't have enough income where they're like, oh yeah, I can take 3 months off and still pay my lease and not have to worry about it, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's pretty sad. And especially in a place like Seattle, you know, it's being so large, it's difficult to support a lot of places. And I know there's a lot of people probably supporting a lot of places, but there's, you know, there's just not enough to go around for everything really, you know? So.
Yeah, exactly. And the other part of that is that a lot of people have recently become unemployed, so they can't necessarily afford to be going out and getting takeout every single night.
Right.
So it's just, you know, a domino effect that is making everybody very unrestless.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been weird. I know. I mean, what do you think moving forward? I mean, what do you think things are going to look like in say a year? I mean, are you think we're still going to have limited capacities? We're going to be, you know, still stringent with masks and things like that? Or is this a.
Yeah, no, I definitely think that. I don't want to use the term the new norm because I'm just so freaking sick of hearing it.
But it's not wrong, you know, it's not.
Yeah, there's changes that are happening and they're happening for good.
Yeah.
I mean, are all of the things that we're experiencing right now still going to be in effect in a year? Hopefully not. But there's definitely going to be precautions that people are taking. Probably from here on out.
Yeah.
And we're definitely going to see a second wave once things start to chill out. It's going to come back.
Yeah.
In the fall, I think is what they're saying, if not the winter.
Yeah, they've kind of the way they're looking at it is they kind of think it may become just a cyclical thing. Like, you know, there's a flu season, yeah. There's going to be like a COVID season, you know, which isn't necessarily limited to just that. But I mean, there's that one season where it hits kind of hard and then it kind of dies off for a while. And, and that it kind of might be the new thing, which really is going to affect so much drastically in America. It is finally doing one thing, and we're proving that right now in this conversation via Zoom. It's finally delivering on the promise of the internet. It's no longer just for porn. Turns out you can do lots of productive things with it. Kids doing school from it, things like this, and it's just people working from home. And I think those are some of the good things, though, that have come out of this is like, you know, we found that, you know, a lot of these people who work, you know, we don't need these big office buildings and to cram 700 people in an office building every day. Like they can do that job from home. You know, they can be in the comfort of their own home. They don't have to get in their car and burn fossil fuels and be on the roads and traffic and, you know, et cetera. They can do just kind of get up and do it from the comfort of their home.
Yeah, no. And another thing that's kind of been a positive about this, kind of in the same vein, is, I mean, it's been a lot easier for me to connect with some of my friends and family that I haven't been able to see for a while just because of crazy schedules.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard for some of my friends who are parents to get a babysitter so that they can come out for happy hour, but it's no big deal for them to get on a Zoom call with a glass of wine after the baby goes to bed.
Right.
So I think that there are some positives with everything that's going on, but we just need to keep pushing for them.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm just forming this thought in my dumb head as we do this. So bear with me. Like you saying that just reminds me of like, I remember, I don't know how old you are. I'm 37, so I assume I'm a good 10 plus years older than you at least. What's that?
Seven.
Okay. And like when I was younger and, you know, watching sci-fi stuff and, you know, you see these, they're like, oh, they're talking to someone on a screen from another part of the country. And you're like, oh man, that's the future. That's crazy. I'll never live to see that. And then, you know, we were just like slowly boiled like a frog with technology, and we're just all of a sudden you're just there and it's just ubiquitous, you know, and you don't even think about it. It's kind of crazy that became the norm of just like, yeah, I just hop on a Zoom with a couple friends and we chat and drink wine for the night. And then it's like, that's how we socialize because we're in different time zones. So that's just what we have to do.
Yeah, no, it's insane to think about because, so I am 30, and that means that I was growing up during a time where technology was just booming.
Yeah.
You know, I was still a kid when certain things were becoming a norm. Like, cell phones were way more popular when I was, like, 17 years old, and then, like, the answering machine died out.
Yeah.
And the cord phone died out and those types of things. So I feel like, especially my age, is in this weird kind of middle ground of technology use.
Yeah.
Where we know what it's like to have a VHS, but we also can navigate everything else pretty well.
Right. Yeah. You went through all the steps and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird. I always tell people, I'm like, yeah, when I was a kid, we had one phone. It was a rotary phone, and it was in the kitchen and it had a 10-foot cord, and that was the phone. You had one phone in your house, you know?
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, I mean, there was when I was really young and like I'd just go places, and you know, when you wanted to ride home, I would just call my home phone collect. And I would just, and they'd be like, you know, I don't know if you remember collect calls on payphones, but you'd be like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like, say your name. And I would just be like, Mom, it's me. Come pick me up. And I'd hang up. And then, you know, that was because like we didn't have, you know, we didn't have money for an actual call, you know, so yeah. It was just like, that was the trick to get, you know, to make a free call.
Well, and it's funny because sometimes I don't even realize that that's not a thing anymore until I'm walking around the city and I'm like, you know, it's been a really long time since I saw a payphone.
Oh yeah. Like, yeah. You know what I've, you know, I, every now and then I see a payphone bank, like a couple, like a thing where there's like a, there should be a payphone, but they've taken all the phones out.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know if, like the city did or crackheads did, but someone has removed the phone part of the payphone. So
yeah, sometimes I see those and I think maybe I'm in the Matrix. You know?
Right? Yeah. Yeah, they're like, what do you mean, Brie? What's a payphone? It's like some Mandela effect thing, like it doesn't exist anymore or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's, we've never had those. We've always had cell phones. Like, oh my God. It's Berenstein Bears. So you, let's talk about comedy. You know, that's what, that's how we met. You've been doing comedy. Obviously this has killed comedy basically as a whole, sure. Stand live comedy for yeah. for who knows how long. What have you been doing in place of comedy? I know for most people it's like, I mean, God, if you do stand-up comedy, it's like if you go a couple days without it, you start to kind of go a little nuts. So how's it been for you?
Yeah, I mean, the first few weeks were very, very hard. I've kind of gotten used to the fact that I'm just here all of the time and I basically have television and work and, you know, occasionally friends.
Yeah.
But now I'm kind of just afraid to go back to it because like what you just said, you get rusty and I'm like, do I even remember all of my jokes? I don't know.
Right.
I mean, there's been a couple new premises and a couple new jokes that I've written, but it's also hard to keep on those when you know that you won't be able to like test it out very soon.
Sure. Yeah.
So I definitely have a running list of things that I'm working on, but at the same time, it's hard to stay committed to that list when I can't get on a stage anytime soon.
Yeah. And it's difficult to stay kind of energized about it because you can't work it out. And it's one of the things I was talking to another comic about the other day was the difficulty. I mean, I did not write. I do some comedy writing. I do some sketch stuff and like video series stuff that jokes, but like I didn't write anything for the stage for probably the first 6 weeks of this. Just nothing was coming to my head. And I think since in the last 2 weeks, I've maybe written three things that I might be able to take to the stage and work on. But we'll see, but I think part of it is we're not really living a life anymore. So it's hard to draw from anything. I mean, when you're like, well, I woke up, at 12:30 again, cause I'm a piece of shit. I stared at my dog for a while. I made some coffee, then I scrolled Facebook for way too long. I forgot to brush my teeth and then I binged Tiger King for the third time. So yeah, I don't really have a lot of perspective
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the thing is like nothing funny has happened to me in the last few months. I mean, tragic things have happened, but I haven't found much of comedy, you know, that's happened in the last few months because like you said, it's bed to couch, couch to kitchen table to commute to work, like nothing.
Yeah, nothing. There's no life and interactions that are like in everything so dominated by, you know, basically the coronavirus that you don't really get to expand outside of that. And I don't know about you, but one of the things I'm dreading the most is every, you know, open mic you go to is just going to be a drudge of the worst hot takes on coronavirus for like, I mean, it's going to be rough. I don't know if I'm going to be able to deal with that part of it.
Yeah, I saw something earlier today. I do not remember who said it, but they were like, oh, hey, remember when we were afraid of all the hack coronavirus jokes that we were going to hear? Now what's going to happen?
Yeah.
With all the protests and things that
people have
opinions about.
A bunch of real hot takes. It's going to be great.
Bunch of hot takes, yeah, that are going to get played off stages here in Seattle.
Oh, my God. It's one of those things, too, where you know that. Here's why I'll post Facebook jokes and things like that, but like nothing I want to take to a stage because first of all, like when you finally get to a stage, the people coming to that audience want a break from it. And not only that, like it doesn't matter what your take is on it. It's not going to be the best version. There's someone way better that's going to have a really great, and they're not, you know, they're people who are really, you know, just touring, high-end touring comics. And like that, maybe one of them will have a really great take. There's no reason for, everyone to have their really interesting perspective on the whole thing.
No, I mean, if you have jokes about what has happened to you during this time, then I think that that's perfectly fair to do. But like as of movement as a whole or a pandemic as a whole.
Yeah,
you're right. It's going to be overdone and you're not going to have the best joke about it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not personal. So
exactly. Yeah. It's something that, I mean, yeah, it happened to everyone, but it also happened to everyone. So it's like, we don't need to keep going on. So without comedy, now, you've obviously had some more free time. Is there anything you have rediscovered that you love, you know, you find yourself doing, being like, oh, I forgot I used to love underwater basket weaving or whatever. I don't know. You know, I mean, like, you know.
I have been trying to write other things. So before I started doing comedy, I was a quote unquote poet. I wrote a lot of poetry.
Okay.
And that was kind of my creative outlet. But ever since I started doing comedy, I felt like most of my creative juices were spent on that.
Yeah.
So since now there's a break, I have found that I can dedicate more of that energy toward other creative outlets like poetry and drawing and doodling and those types of things as well. I still feel guilty though, because I'm not doing it as much as I should.
Sure.
I'm still just binging Netflix after work and, like you said, sleeping until noon and just trying to distract myself from what's going on, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to get motivated when there's not really, I lived and died by my Google Calendar because, I mean, if it wasn't on my calendar, it wasn't real. And it was just like color coded and a million things every day. And I look at a completely blank calendar and it's hard to get motivated to do much. So I, you know, for the first few weeks, I was just kind of trying to float and enjoy the time off. More recently, I've kind of been more productive and trying to be like, okay, I want to treat at least, I'm not doing stand-up, but I can still treat it like a job and spend 6 to 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. I'm like, I'm either writing or filming something or podcast or like editing my book or blah, blah, blah. Like I'm doing something, you know? Yeah. So I'm trying to be better at that, at least regiment it a little. Cause yeah, you can get lost and kind of spun off in like, I don't know what day it is and what time it is. It doesn't matter. It's,
yeah, giving yourself structure, I think, is the hardest thing about all of these things. Like, I've had to be very disciplined to not start drinking until 5 p.m., no matter what day it is.
Oh, yeah? Has that been the rule? Don't drink, no day drinking, just drink at 5?
Yeah, because I could just get too far into it if I let myself start drinking when I want to, which is like 2 p.m., because I work in sales, so it's super easy to get wasted and still do your job well.
Yeah. You know? What do you do, if we can ask?
Yeah, so I work for a company, and they are a specialized staffing agency for the creative and marketing world. So we help like copywriters, graphic designers, web developers get jobs anywhere from like 4 hours of work all the way up to 40 hours a week or a full-time direct hire with a company.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and my job is account management. So I'm on the arm of the company where I work directly with the clients in Seattle companies, mom and pops all the way up to Fortune 500 companies here, just to see what the gaps are in their marketing departments, and just, you know, educate them that we have, you know, close to a million candidates across the United States that are very specialized in this field, and let them know that we can help them tackle projects. And then once we fill those, the recruiters do that. That's the other arm of the company. They fill the role, and then we get paid based on that service.
And you can do all that drunk.
Yes. Sometimes it makes it easier.
Yeah, I can imagine. So,
right, especially right now, because all of my clients are also in quarantine. And
sure.
A lot of them are parents, so they're like, yeah, I'm just going to stay in this home office and drink this, you know, fifth until I have to go outside.
Yeah, well, I guess that might, there's one way to do it. Yeah, it is difficult to not, I quit drinking a little over a year ago, although this quarantine has made me want to start again. You know, it's only like, you know, it's the first time I actually had urges to drink again, because I'm like, God, what is this? Isn't even real life. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, just drink for, you know, and then when this is over, you'll start again, you know. But I'm like, no, it's fine. But I mean, certainly friends of mine, you know, they wake up and like, yeah, I'm fucking drunk by 11 a.m. because I literally have like, what? I'm going to be hungover tomorrow. Ooh, I got nothing, you know, anything to do tomorrow either. So I definitely understand. Yeah, it's easy to kind of get lost in that.
Yeah.
You said you've been binging a lot of Netflix. What have you been watching?
Oh, man, what have I not watched on Netflix?
I know, right? Doesn't it feel like you're running out of Netflix?
Yeah, no, actually, it does feel like that. The other day, my boyfriend was over here, and he was like, oh, how about this show? And I was like, I already watched it. Oh, how about this show? I already watched it.
Yeah.
I think most recently I watched Dead to Me with Christina Applegate, and then the one girl from, she's in Bloodline and a couple other things, too.
Okay.
Have you heard of this show?
I have not.
Okay, it's kind of kitschy, but it's, I got into it.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's about murder, but like in a funny kind of way.
you know, fun murder.
Yeah, I mean, they make it cute.
Sure. that's, I don't know if that's a defense that holds up in court, but you know, you can give it a try. I got asked, did you watch The Tiger King?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I watched it before it was cool.
Did you? Okay.
It was like one day before everybody started talking.
Before it blew up. God, talk about right place, right time, right? You think Netflix knew, they're like, quarantine, release The Tiger King.
It was one of the best things that happened to us for a solid month.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. It distracted us. Definitely. Who's your favorite character?
Oh, I don't know if I have a favorite character because they all just annoy the shit out of me.
It's wild, right?
I do have to say I was the most fascinated with Joe Exotic.
Yeah, like, sure.
You know, he's just so over the top about literally everything he does. And to an extent, I kind of admired it.
Sure, that he definitely had a passion for what he did.
He did not give a fuck.
Yeah.
And it's like, sometimes, you know, we need a channel a little bit of a Joe Exotic, but not too much.
Right. Yeah. Just enough. Yeah. just up until the meth.
I think that's a solid line that will draw on the sand.
Yeah. We'll draw on the meth. Draw that line in the meth. Yeah. It's wild. It's crazy to think that many insane people were that closely tight knit. You know,
it's just so weird to me because I think that my cat would kill me in an instant if he was bigger.
I think it would too. Cats, no. Cats are murder machines. That's all they are. They, you know, I mean, literally, like, you can't, like, you know how people are like, yeah, if you die in your apartment, eventually your dog may eat you, you know, because they need food. Well, a cat, if you like sleep too heavy for a little while, like they might try and take a nibble, just a test nibble to see if you're like, fuck it, I'm going for it. What are you? Let's see if this son of a bitch wakes up. So,
yeah, and he's a fatty too. He's like 25 pounds. So
no, that's a pretty big cat.
I wouldn't be surprised if he tried to eat me tonight.
Well, we'll see. We'll check in on you tomorrow. Make sure you're still alive. So, but you know, let's circle back to comedy. So how long have you been doing comedy for?
It was a year in February.
Okay.
So kind of odd because I stopped doing it in February, or I stopped doing it in March because of COVID.
Oh, sure.
So, you know.
Yeah.
So I guess a year, we'll just keep calling it a year forever.
Okay. Now what you live in Seattle now, you said you lived in Spokane for a while. Are you from Spokane originally, or what's your path?
Yeah. So I grew up in the Seattle area. I grew up in a town called Belfair,
mm-hmm.
Just across the water from Seattle, really small town. But I ended up going to Gonzaga.
Oh, okay.
And, I did my bachelor's degree there, and then I ended up meeting a boy and stayed there for him. And then I ended up getting my master's degree at Gonzaga too. So for the majority of the time I was living in Spokane, I was going to school at Gonzaga. And then I left in 2017, so 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then back to Seattle, and then you were working and doing the poetry thing, and then jumped into comedy. What made you want to make the leap to comedy?
Yeah, so actually the first time that I ever did comedy was at Gonzaga.
Okay.
I was a sophomore, I think. So I was like 19 years old. And
sure.
I actually found the video of it a few weeks ago. And it was really clear to me why I stopped doing it for 10 years. Because it was just painful to watch. It went okay, though. People laughed. But I just wasn't in a point in my life where I had much perspective or understanding about joke writing or anything like that. So then when I moved out here, I've always loved comedy, and I actually kept writing premises down in between for those 10 years. But I started going out to the local comedy scene and watching shows. And I met a girl one time. I haven't ever seen her in the community since this night, but I remember talking to her about it, and she was like, well, why don't you just like try it? So I was like, well, I wish I could, but you know, like, I don't really think that I'm that funny, or it's really scary and blah, blah, blah. And she was like, just do a freaking open mic.
Yeah.
If you bomb, nobody's going to remember you. If you do great, nobody's going to remember you.
Right.
But you can decide if you want to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And I was actually living in Bremerton when I decided to try it. And there was like another one of those competitions. And I did pretty well that night, like well enough for me to keep wanting to do it.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know how it is. It's very addicting.
Oh, yeah.
Like the better you start to get and the more milestones you hit, the more you just want to keep doing it and doing it as often as possible.
Yeah, it definitely, you know, first time up if it's, you're in, you know, if you're addicted, you get bit by the bug. That is great advice though. The first time up, I tell that to most people, or really anyone who asks about doing an open mic. I'm like, just do it. I literally say the same thing. No one's going to remember you. And I promise you, you won't be the worst person up there that night. Like that's usually what I tell people, because I'm like, there's people I've seen who've been doing it for 2 years and will still do worse than you, I promise. Like, So I go, don't worry, you won't be the worst person. And the only people, someone that people who watch, the only people they remember, if they remember anyone, is the worst person is the person they remember the most, and then maybe the best person. Everyone else just kind of, and I'm like, if you're forgettable, that's a win.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that's fair, because you're in the middle of the pack.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, I remember I went and I watched a few open mics after she gave me that advice, just to kind of feel it out. And I do remember thinking that, seeing like some of the worst people at these open mics and just being like, well, they went up, so I guess I can go up and
right.
try.
Yeah. Yeah, it is difficult going back and watching old video, though. That is something that, oh boy. I mean, I've done it where, in, you know, it's funny because other people have been like, oh, that's not bad. I'm like, that's fuck. I can't even imagine like that was ever me on stage. Are you kidding me? Who said I should keep going? Why did I think I should keep going if that was me originally? You know?
I mean, I guess we're our own worst critics, but like once you get to a certain point and you understand the flow and the method and those kinds of things, and you watch yourself when you did not understand those things,
yeah,
it's cringy.
Yeah, I mean, it really is like anything. It's just reps, you know? I mean, that's all it is. Again, advice I always give newer comics when they're like, oh, how do I do this or that? I'm like, I go hit 3 to 5 open mics a week for the next year or two. And then if you still love it and, you know, you haven't quit or killed yourself, let me know and we'll fucking, you know, we'll go from there. Cause like you're not, you know, the first, you know, 6 months to a year, you're kind of just figuring it out. You know, I mean, some people have an aptitude where they catch on pretty quick. Some people, you know, I've seen do it for a couple of years and I'm like, I think arguably you may have gotten worse. Like, I'm not even sure how that is possible, but.
Yeah. I think it's hilarious when, like strangers will find out that I do comedy. And then they'll just have everything to say about it. Like, oh, I've been thinking about doing it. I think I could do 15 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Yeah. I'm like, dude, you have no idea how long 7 minutes is until you are alone on stage with a microphone and a spotlight and everyone looking at you. And tell me, like, and just you're going to be like, you know, someone filibustering in Congress, just like doing the, you know, the ABCs because you have run out of things to say. Because it gets lonely very, very quickly up there. I had a friend of mine tell me they were going to try and open they were going to do this show. They were a musician and they're like, we're going to do this show. And he's like, I'm going to try comedy for the first time. I'm like, oh, cool. How much time you got? He's like, I'm going to do like a half an hour. I'm like, like, no, you're not. There's no way, dude. I'm like, you know, there's, even if you're up there talking for a half an hour, that's not a half an hour of stand-up comedy. Cause like what people don't realize is like your weird stories and inside jokes with your friends, exactly. Nobody cares about, and it's not relatable.
Yeah. You can't just go up there and tell a story.
Yeah.
A 10-minute story and keep people engaged. Like, have you ever watched a special? Like, do they do that? No.
Right. Yeah. You know, and even guys who are more storyteller comics are so, you know, that when people get to being able to be a storyteller comic, it's because they've been doing it forever and people are invested in that person and that comic as a person. So sure. They're willing to take a longer walk with them. But when you're just some jack off that they don't know, they're like, why do I give a shit about what this guy and what this guy and his friends were at a festival, the Juggalos taking dabs, doing what? I don't care. Like what?
Yeah. I mean, I will admit I learned that one the hard way, but I mean, I never tried to tell a long story, but a short story, and it still just never worked for me.
No, it's just not, yeah, people just don't care. It's not, it's just too much.
Yeah.
In the,
yeah, we lost.
Yeah, the it is funny when, it's funny you mention people when you tell them you do comedy. I get this a lot when, you know, if I take an Uber or something, someone's like, oh, what do you do? I'm like, oh, where are you headed? I'm like, I'm headed on the comedy club. Oh, you work there? I'm like, well, I do stand-up comedy for a living. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, people say I could do stand-up. I'm going to do stand-up comedy. I'm like, hey, thank you for marginalizing something I've worked my entire life for, you know.
Yeah, no shit. Like, people don't do that with other things.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, you meet a NBA basketball player, and like, well, you know, they told me I could go pro.
Yeah, I was thinking about, making myself eligible for the draft next year. So, yeah. I've never met a commercial airline pilot and been like, oh, you fly for Delta? I was thinking about dabbling in a little commercial airline pilot, like a DC-10 something. You know what I'm saying? So,
I can see that. The other thing that cracks me up is, you do comedy? Tell me a joke.
Yeah.
Make me laugh right now.
Right. On the spot, on demand. That one is very common. Rick, that's the one. I actually have a bit about that I do where I'm like, yeah, no one, it's the only profession where like no one believes you. Like, prove it to me right now. Like,
right.
I've never been talking to someone and they're like, oh, I'm a baker. And I'm like, oh, really? You bake? Well, you're not making a tiramisu right now. You know, it's like, what? Yeah, no shit, man.
I guess it's just one of those things where people watch and they're like, oh, I could easily do that. You know, you're just on a stage talking.
Yeah.
That's what it's perceived as, I suppose.
Right. There's really no perspective or knowledge of like how literally, like, I mean, you will take 3 minutes of jokes and like work it over weeks, sometimes potentially months, you know, depending on what it is or if it's working or how much you like it. And then, you know, 3 minutes probably becomes like about 2 minutes. And then you're like, oh, now I have 2 minutes of comedy, and then I'll write a little more. And then maybe in a month, I'll have 5 minutes of comedy. And you're like, it was years before I felt confident doing even like 35 minutes or 30 minutes, you know. I mean, that's not, I mean, when people are like, oh, I can do that, I'm like, no, you probably can't. It's takes a little bit. It takes a little bit of time. I have my neighbor, my friend was over the other day and she was outside talking to my neighbor and she comes in, she was, your neighbor still is surprised that you do comedy for a living. I've lived here for 6 years, you know, and they're still don't, you know, and, but they're an older couple, you know, they don't understand that, like, you know, you don't have to die in a factory for a living or something, you know? And I'm like, she's like, yeah, she's like, she goes, your neighbor thinks, doesn't believe you do comedy. She says you're so serious all the time. I'm like, well, I'm sorry. I'm not like, just crack a joke, like out there like, hey, Mary, what's the deal with airplane food? Am I right? Okay. See you later. You know, like, what do you want me to do?
Exactly. Yeah. You don't have to be on all of the time.
Right.
Because that's not the way it works.
Yeah. For the longest time, I tried to be pretty amicable and like joke back when people say things. Now, now they're like, oh, you're not being very funny right now. Or like, and I'm just like, yeah, well, buy a ticket, you know, like,
that's a good one.
So I'm sorry. I'm not like a wind up Susie doll. You just put a quarter in my chest and I start talking here. This is, you know, like, this is a profession. I don't, you know, just be funny. So,
yeah,
also, like,
exactly. I mean, so I mentioned that I have a boyfriend, but
yeah,
it's new. So, before him, I was going on Tinder dates and stuff, and they would learn that I was a comedian, and they would ask if they could like come do an open mic or a show for our first date.
Yeah.
And I would just say, you know, I'm not here to entertain you
right.
on our date. I'm not you know, quarter monkey or anything like that.
Yeah. That's also a horrific, like, I got a buddy who does comedy, and that was his move. He'd always bring these girls, and he was like he's like habitual, like, first dater. And yeah. he'd always bring these girls to shows and stuff. I'm like, dude, will you, like, that's the worst first date ever,
yeah.
first of all. Like, that's a horrific thing to do to these people. And, like, second of all, like, you don't want to be, like, you don't want to know comedy me first. That's not the first version
no.
of me you want to know.
Definitely not.
Like, because, I mean, it is me, but it's not me, you know? I'm going to say exaggerated things. I'm probably going to say things that may offend some people. I don't fucking mean any of it, but I'm going to talk a lot of shit. And it's going to be pretty weird afterwards. So it's also very raw and real. Like, you're going to learn yeah. things and hear things that are not necessarily the exact views that I may carry.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. And that's why I would always say no. I mean, for the A, it's just weird for you to come to my shows or my open mics
yeah.
as a first date. But also, yeah, it's a version of me that I just don't want you to know until you know who I actually am. Because, like you said, it's me, but cranked up to 100.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes slightly disingenuous or like a exaggerated version for comedic effect. And you're like, I'm playing yeah. this part up extremely, you know, for a laugh, you know, so and they people don't always know where it separates. And if they don't know you yet, it's difficult for them to understand that. I don't know about you, but personally, I actually hate having anyone I know at my shows at all. I would much rather do shows to a crowd of strangers than anyone I know, whether it's friends, family, anyone I'm being, if I have a significant other. I despise it because even if it's just 1% doubt in my head, there's always something like I feel like I'm thinking about that person if I know they're in the crowd, and even subconsciously it may like just throw off timing or a word or something, or I may think, oh well, what are they going to think of this. I want a clean slate and just say what I want and like don't want to have to worry about the repercussions because I know none of these people know me. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, it 100% makes sense. I mean, there's, depending on where you are, there's kind of an awkwardness of, well, these people don't know me at all, so
yeah.
this is my first impression for them. But at the same time, yeah, it doesn't really matter if you screw up or if you are that version of yourself that maybe is unattractive or
sure.
what have you. You
yeah.
know, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. The now I imagine now I hate putting this qualifier on it, but take this in the spirit it's intended. As a female comic, I imagine dating would be difficult because like guys always want to be the funny one. So like I imagine there's this obstacle of being a female who does comedy and then dating someone and they're like, they want to be the funny one. And you're like, it's like a challenge to them. Or is that a weird, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Is that a thing where, you know, that's gotta be, difficult for some guys to deal with?
Yeah. I mean, I will say that this is the first actual relationship that I've had since I've been a comic, and, he hasn't gotten the chance to see me do comedy. He does know that I do comedy.
Sure.
He's very supportive of that. But in the dating world, yes, that was something that came up on dates a lot. There was just a competitive nature all of the time
right.
that just didn't make me feel very good.
Yeah.
You know, the last Tinder date that I went on, the guy was one of those people that was like, yeah, I have 15 to 20 minutes, but I've never been on stage.
Yeah. yeah.
And he hammered it into me all night long.
Right.
I would mention something about me doing comedy, and then he would twist it and say, oh, well, this is my idea of what I'm going to do. And I just think that I would be just the best. And I actually ended up calling two girlfriends to come rescue me from that date.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And he still asked me out again.
He did. So, well, obviously, if he's not self-aware enough to understand that he can't do 20 minutes of comedy if he's never been on stage, he's probably not self-aware enough to know that the date was going horrifically.
Yeah. Apparently.
Because, I mean, that's at least he has a consistent narrative of being not self-aware.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would just imagine, I mean, knowing guys and knowing, you know, like, just, you know, people who want to, like, that challenge, like, oh, yeah, yeah, I'm funny. And you're like, just chill out, man. God.
Yeah.
So what do you think, what's your view on comedy moving forward? I mean, do you, it's probably a ways out until comedy can pick back up in Seattle. I assume, probably months down the road. If you guys are still not, you know, kind of in trying to go for a modified phase one, I think comedy clubs would be probably phase three, phase four even.
Yeah.
Time, do you have any idea on timeline? And I mean, what do you think that looks like for comedy in general and for you specifically?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to speculate. I have talked to certain people that run rooms here and their ideas about it. And it's not super optimistic. It's definitely like what you mentioned, months down the road.
Yeah.
So I just think there's going to have to be some sort of adjustments, whether that's like smaller audience, like you're going to sell tickets to open mics and only sell 20 tickets or I don't know. Because I'm not business minded in that way.
Sure.
But there's going to be some adjustments that are going to have to happen. And I know that right now, a lot of the comedy community is trying to switch to virtual shows, virtual mics, those types of things, which some of them are okay, but there's just nothing like a live audience.
Yeah, I mean, there's some comedy open mics that have come up. I was offered a couple shows by some comedy clubs I work for to do kind of Zoom shows, and I turned them all down. I just really, I'm pretty adamant against that. I, you know, maybe eventually I'm going to just have to bite the bullet and do it. I mean, yeah, like you said, there's nothing like being in the room and that energy of being in the room and the timing. And, I mean, it's just like, it's, I don't know. It's like ordering a comedy show off the Wish app. It's just not going to be, it's just not going to be the same. It's not it's just going to be off enough to make you feel, you know, a little weird. And I guess maybe I'd rather just not do it than even do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't begrudge people who do, but man, that's just so difficult, you know, without the people there and really knowing what you're getting the laughs on and being able to gauge what's working. And again, the timing, it's you'll never really know what's working and what's not.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel about it too. I mean, there was one Instagram Live thing that I ended up doing. But the format that they had was kind of open, so you could do sketch comedy or whatever you wanted to do. You could do stand-up comedy if you wanted to, but I decided against doing a set because I just knew that I would feel so awkward without that interaction from the audience.
Yeah, was that the one that, I'm going to forget her name at the moment. Who runs that?
Maylin.
Is it Maylin? Maybe it's a different one. There's some girl.
He also goes by Alexa.
Yes.
On Instagram.
I think that's who. She asked me to do that too, and I was supposed to. That I was going to do because it was freeform. You know, where you don't have to do stand up, because I like doing, you know, I did a lot of improv. I used to do live kind of one man shows and sketch stuff. So that I was kind of into. I did one show online. It was kind of a, we did it as a charity event for suicide prevention. But it was a variety show where we had comics on with the live audience and interacting with the audience and playing games with them. Things like that. I like, and I'm willing to do, because it's interactive and you're getting direct, you know, feedback and interaction with the audience. But this like, hey, I'm in a empty room and I'm telling jokes to my couch, like that.
Yeah.
That seems like a nightmare to me.
Yeah. So. And I mean, I do know that some comedians are making it work for them, but personally, I mean, I just feel like I'm still too new and still figuring it out. You know, I'm a year in.
Yeah.
So I still have some things about my performance that need to be tweaked on that level that I don't foresee it going well for me to do it, like you said, in an empty room.
Yeah. And that, you know, at least you're savvy enough to know, you know, hopefully comedy can come back in a way where we can actually do it in front of people sooner than later. I mean, I know here in Eastern Washington, we're about a month out till our club opens. And that's kind of tentative too. That keeps getting pushed back. So, you know, we'll see if that even happens. What's one of the things that you've been, I mean, the quarantine's kind of lifting. Things are kind of, you know, I guess in Seattle, it's a little more strict still. What's one of the things, like the number one thing you've missed that you want to do that you haven't been able to do?
Other than comedy, I would say karaoke.
Is that, that's it? You can karaoke in your house, right? It's not the same without the people. It's like comedy, right?
Because there's nobody else hyping you up.
Okay.
In the audience.
That's right.
Yeah, and then like you're out there with your friends getting drunk and a good time. So I miss that. I do also very much miss sports.
Yeah.
I can't believe I haven't been to a baseball game this year. It's going to be the first season I've missed in 25 years.
Is baseball your go-to sport?
Yeah.
Mariners, I take it. Mariners. Is that all right?
Mariners, born and raised in Washington.
This was going to be the season too.
For better or worse. Yeah, this was going to be the season.
This was the one.
That's what people keep saying about Gonzaga, though, was that this was going to be the year that
really
won the NCAA tournament if we were able to compete.
Yeah, I'm sure. That's, you know, let's say that. I think I'll say that. I'll agree to that. Why not? Might as well.
Yeah, exactly. We
might as well make wild claims that we can't substantiate. if there's any time in America that you can make wild claims that you don't have to substantiate, I feel like now is the definitely that time.
Oh yeah,
for a million reasons. So I mean, our president does. Why don't we? Fuck it. Let's just say what we want to say. You don't have to prove anything. All right. So Bree, before, let's see, we'll let you go here in just a second. I'm going to, before we have you go though, we're going to play a game called the, Rundown. This is a segment I play with all my first time guests. It's a pretty simple game. What we do is we just ask a series of questions. Individually, these questions don't mean much, but when you put these questions together, it starts to form a picture. Pattern, if you will, of what this individual is about. So I'm just going to ask you these questions and you just answer them. Sound easy enough?
Sure.
Okay. All right. So because you just mentioned you miss karaoke, I'm going to start with this question. What is your go-to karaoke song?
What's Up by the Four Non-Blondes.
Okay. It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's a good
Very
one.
Perfect. Right now.
What, very pertinent?
Yeah.
That's very true. What is a karaoke song you think no one should sing?
Ooh. First thing that pops into my head is Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
Because it's very technically hard song.
Yes. Yeah.
B, no, it's just puts people to sleep, even if you can do it well.
Right. It's not like upbeat and fun.
Yeah.
You know, no one's at a bar. Yeah, like 1:15 in the morning, they just did a bump off the bathroom stall, and yeah, they're like getting a Jaeger shot. And they're like, you know what I could go for? Some Judy Garland right now would really knock my son. I'd really crank this evening up a little bit. I'll tell you what. So, all right, that's a good answer. All right, if you could travel anywhere in the world, anywhere you wanted to go, all expenses were paid. But the caveat is you had to travel with the person in life that you hate the most.
Oh.
Where would you go and who would that person be?
I would say somewhere in Thailand.
Okay.
Because I know you can go places and visit like Buddhist temples.
Yep.
Where you're completely silent.
Oh, very, very shrewd, Brie. I like that.
And I mean, like, if we're talking about somebody I know, I don't really want to, like, name names.
Okay.
But, you know, it might be somebody that I work with.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. We'll leave it at that. You work with, you go to. I like the Buddhist temple angle though. That's very smart. That's a good idea. Plus, that's actually like a great. That's like a dope place to visit.
Yeah, and no, then I've always wanted to go to Thailand.
Yeah,
to see the elephants and all those kinds of things. But if you're gonna put me in that position, then I gotta say somewhere where we're completely silent.
So I gotta tell you, I've been asking that question for. Pushing 5 years now on this show. Mm-hmm. And that may be the best answer I've gotten yet. Because part of the reason I asked that question, it was always like, cause you know, you get to go anywhere you want, all expenses paid. So like, you know, people automatically think, well, I've always wanted to go to the French Riviera or something. They're number one destination.
Sure.
I'm like, yeah, I get that. It's all expenses paid. But do you want that to be ruined by the person you hate the most? Or do you want to go, you know, do you go somewhere like Poughkeepsie? Because screw it, it doesn't matter. You're going to have a miserable time. So it's like a kind of a puzzle. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to mitigate your loss, and you were able to successfully navigate it and find a great vacation while still taking someone you hate. I may have to stop asking that question now because we found the answer.
I won it.
You literally won this segment. You win the car. It's a 93 Geo Metro. It's not that nice of a car. all right. If let's move on to food. If you had to have one, if you could have one pizza for any toppings on your pizza, you know, not from a place, but just toppings, you can have any toppings you want on that pizza. But now that's the only toppings you can have on that on pizza for the rest of your life.
Okay.
What would those toppings be?
I really just want to answer this in a very boring way.
That's okay. It's your pizza, Brie.
Eat pepperoni pizza exclusively already.
Okay.
Like, there's never a time where I want something other than pepperoni.
That's not a bad answer. I mean, pepperoni's a great. That's your class. It's classic. It's. Do you patronize Big Mario's Pizza over there in Seattle?
I haven't actually been to that place yet.
I highly suggest it.
Okay, what is it in Capitol Hill? Where is that?
They just closed the location and reopened one, and I think Queen Anne's is where they are.
Okay, that's probably why, because I don't get out there very often, but I do like Queen Anne.
They have amazing pizza, big old slices, big, you know, good pepperoni, big old greasy slices, good for late night. They actually used to do an awesome lunch special where it was like a slice of pizza and a 40 ounce of Old English for like $5. It was amazing. Nice. If you ever want to get day drunk in Seattle, I doubt they do it anymore. That was like 9 years ago, but that was, I'm like, this is kind of great. All right, let's, we're going to stick in the food world for the next question, and we're going to go to fruit. If you could have just one fruit for the rest of your life, it's now the only fruit you can ever eat again, what fruit would that be?
Easily pineapple.
Oh, I love you for that. That's the best.
I eat pineapple until my mouth bleeds.
You're supposed to peel it first, Brie.
I mean, yeah, but like, you know how much acid and sugar is in that? But like, I will eat the whole thing and it starts to cut my mouth up and I don't care.
It's so good. I'm with you 100%. Pineapple is my answer also for that question. I like fruits a lot, but pineapple is just the one I can keep going back to. I never get sick of it.
Yeah.
That's 100%. It. Absolutely. All right. If you could purge for 1 hour, like the movie The Purge, anything is legal, there's no ramifications, what would you do?
That's a hard question. I'm going to go boring again and just like rob a bank, pay off my student loans.
That's not, well, it's practical. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just... I mean, right now, visit a restaurant.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. Go outside after 8 p.m. and eat at a restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's, again, it's practical. I like it. There's nothing wrong with that. All right. How about if you could have one superpower, what would it be?
I think it would be to teleport.
That's the one. Teleport, huh?
Yeah. I've always kind of had that as my stock answer for those types of questions, because then you can just kind of go wherever you want to, whenever you want to.
Yeah. So you, no limitations on the just teleport to where you think of it and you're there.
Yeah. Or I mean, there's probably some other stipulations that I have to do, but.
Now it seems like that's a good answer. That really makes travel really easy, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think that's probably why I have always had it, is because I haven't really gotten to travel a ton in my lifetime. So
what's the number one travel destination on your bucket list that you want to go to?
I was gonna go to Ireland. My flight was set for St. Patrick's Day, and Ireland closed down all of their pubs the day before St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, not even worth going then.
That's pretty high on my list. But I do also really actually want to go to Thailand as well. And then just that everybody wants to go to places like Paris and Rome. And,
yeah.
Because I literally have been to Amsterdam and Canada.
Oh, well, those are pretty. I mean, those both can be good.
Yeah, it was great, but it's just two places, you know?
Yeah. Well, Thailand sounds great. Yeah, I've heard great things. I've been all over Central America. That's what I've explored the most. I'm Mexican. I love Latin culture. I love that. And I've gone to Canada and all over Mexico. But yeah, I think next on my list is, I can't decide if I want to try somewhere in Africa or Japan. That's kind of my next where I'm going.
Japan would be really cool. I mean, Africa would be too, but
depending on where you go, yeah. A lot of range.
Yeah.
So Africa would be hard because it's so big and there's so many places to visit. You kind of have to like pick a part of Africa you want to visit.
Yeah.
And just like, you know, and just kind of do it. So, all right. If you could get rid of one state in America, which state would it be and why?
Oh, probably, I don't know. This is hard. Somewhere in the South, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Just for obvious reasons.
Right. For, you know.
But I haven't been to a lot of states either. I've been to like most of the states I've been to touch. The farthest east I've been is Chicago.
Okay.
And I haven't.
I hate to break it to you. That's not a state.
I meant.
I know. I'm just kidding with you.
That's the farthest east I've been.
Yeah, okay. So somewhere in the south, like, we'll say Alabama.
Yeah.
That seems like a good one to get rid of.
Yeah.
What, if you were a hip hop artist, what would your rap name be?
Oh. The first thing that comes to mind is Brizzle.
All right. That's it's because
there's that Snoop Dogg song that's like, Fine Dime Brizzles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I always thought that was funny to call myself Brizzle. So.
There you go. That's it. It's got a story and it ties into hip hop. So it makes sense. I
mean, first thing that comes to mind anyways.
All right. Okay. And this is to settle a debate between a friend of mine and I that's been going on. It's an ongoing debate over the last several weeks. What is the largest, deadliest animal that you think you could take in hand-to-hand combat to the death?
That I could take hand-to-hand combat?
And not like, you know, not like, you know, something that you'd have to actually like, fight, you know, not like a black widow or something like that, you know. We're looking.
Well, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in my ability to fight hand to hand combat with any animal.
You don't have a lot of training in animal combat, Bree.
Yeah, I'm gonna say like a boar or something.
Okay.
I mean,
that's bold.
Maybe wrestle with that for a little while.
Okay.
They're still pretty deadly.
Yeah, they are deadly. They've got those tusks. They're big.
Yeah.
Like boars, like wild boars can get huge too.
Yeah.
So.
What was your answer?
I said coyote.
Okay.
My buddy said he could take a cougar. And I told him there's no fucking way in a million lifetimes he could ever take a cougar in a fight to the death.
Man, wow.
Yeah, I'm like, there's no way. There's no way, you know.
No.
They're just too big and strong. At first he thought maybe even a chimp. And I'm like, there's no. Chimps are so strong. And they're all muscle. They're so vicious.
Strong.
Yeah.
Like, you don't even know where that strength is coming from.
It's crazy. Yeah. They're like, how do you eat plants and just be all muscle? What are you doing? Yeah. How many chin ups? What are you doing? P90X back there? So, yeah, I said, I landed on coyote. Maybe a wolf.
Okay.
But after that, yeah, the next jump is kind of cougar, and there's no way I could take a cougar.
No. Yeah, I'm just of the camp to stay away.
Yeah, that's probably safer.
Like we're going back to Joe Exotic again over here.
You're living. You're doing it right. You're doing it right.
Yeah.
All right, and lastly, as per rules of the game, we turn the tables, and I allow the guest to ask me one question that I might answer honestly.
I wish I had known this before coming on here.
That's okay. It's more fun when it's on the spot because it's just organic, whatever comes up.
Okay. So you can't answer comedian, but what would be a dream job of yours?
Besides being a stand-up comic, being a writer.
Like for...
books. Oh. I would screenplays. Yeah, I actually published a book about 10 years ago. And I've written several. I'm working on, actually, that's one of the things I've been working on this quarantine is trying to get some of my other ones up and ready to go and get them published. So yeah, I mean, that was what I wanted to do most of my life was write. That's kind of how I got into doing comedy for a living, actually, was I was writing, and then I started getting jobs, and I still lived in LA doing punch up on scripts and stuff like that from people I knew in Hollywood. And then I was submitting writing segments or packages to people online, and the only thing that was paying at the time was comedy. So I started writing comedy. I'm like, well, all right, I'll do that. And I did it, and it paid, and I'm like, well, I guess I do this now. So, and that's kind of led me to stand up. So, but I mean, honestly, I would be more than happy with writing screenplays and books and doing that for a living.
Cool. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. So, all right, Bree, why don't, I'm going to let you get out of here. I appreciate you being here. Why don't you tell people, do you want to shout out any social media platforms, anywhere people can find you and follow you if you want them to, or that's up to you.
Yeah. So, Instagram is the best place to find me. You can find me just under my name, Bree Badilli, or Bree B underscore 89.
All right. And we'll provide links in the comments for that too. So guys, go follow Bree, and then hopefully once this all ends, sooner than later, you can find her live. So follow her on Instagram. I'm sure you'll get updates on when she will have a chance to see her live. And then maybe we can get you over here and get you doing something again. It'd be great to have you back over on this side of the mountains and doing some comedy. So.
Yeah, definitely. And I would assume that it would be sooner than I could do it here. So
yeah, I mean, ideally, we'll see. Who knows what's going to happen? I mean, it's been crazy, so who knows what might happen in the next tonight. You know, the sun's dying, Yellowstone caldera earthquake is happening, there's aliens, there's 5G towers, everything's trying to kill us right now. So it's hard to say.
Right.
All right, guys. Well, we are going to get out of here for the evening. Again, we thank you for hanging out. Don't forget the new schedule every Tuesday and Wednesday. All right, guys. For the social hour, I've been Deese, and for Bree, thank you very much, guys. And now for my weekly apologies. I'd like to apologize to Judy Garland, People Who Drink Old English, Seattle, karaoke bars, payphones, and the Mandela Effect. Thanks for listening, everyone, and we will see you next week.
This podcast is a Pants Pending Studios production.
And part of the Pants Pending Studios podcast network.
Find more of our great shows just by searching Pants Pending in your podcatcher.
For more information or to contact us directly, visit us at pantspending.com.
Please subscribe to this show, share it with your friends, like it on Facebook, and rate it on iTunes.
And we thank you for making us a part of your listening day.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending.
Pants Pending. Studios!